My guest at this time is Virginia Republican Congressman Dave Brad. He represents the Old Dominion 7th Congressional District. He's a member of the House Budget Committee, and he joins me just minutes after the U.S. Senate voted, finally, to pass a short-term funding resolution and reopen the full federal government. In addition to getting his reaction to how that has played out, we want to get his reaction to the what appears to be an impending immigration policy debate, as well as what he has seen and thinks ought to be the course forward with respect to the FISA memo that's been approved to be seen by all House members by the House Intelligence Committee. But one issue at a time here, Congressman. Thanks for being here.
Hey, you bet. Thanks, Greg. And one thing, it's fun just hearing you lay out, I got to solve all the world's problems. One of the things that does unite all of these is the American people got to be in the middle of this stuff, and they're not. This city has just been way too closed and run by elites, and so now people are starting to see on all the issues you just mentioned where the real fault lines are and where the power centers lie. So fire away and let's go through them one by one.
Absolutely. So on Monday, the U.S. Senate voting 81-18 to pass a short-term funding resolution, I believe, till February the 8th. In exchange, the Democrats get a promise that there will soon be the beginning of a debate on a law that will give legal protection to those currently under the DACA program. But we'll get into the details of that in just a moment. From what I can tell, the bill that was actually passed isn't a whole lot different than the one that was offered on Friday evening. What do you make of the Democrats deciding now that it's time to vote yes?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's so hard to communicate right now. So I'm glad you have me on. But like CNN a day or two ago saying it's the Trump shutdown and, you know, just through this kind of thing. So I posted today the seating chart in Congress. I said, just, you know, to clarify, ask your kids, all the red votes here were yes to keep the government open, and all the blue Democrat votes over there on that side, 95% of them were to shut the government down. And so, I mean, it's amazing that you have to have a debate on who shut the government down, right? I mean, you got 95% in the House and the Senate on the Democrat side voting to shut it down. And so, I mean, that's a problem in the country. If you forego rationality and language in the public square, that's a hint at where your society is. And so that kicks you off. And then, yeah, the deal is relatively the same because they got out way over their skis. I mean, they're trading off. They're saying they want a DACA debate. We're going to have a DACA debate. What they really mean is they want a clean Democrat DACA bill and no border security. Everybody's been clear, right? In the Goodlatte bill, that's supposedly this very conservative bill. It's policy that's been around for 20 years. And Bill Clinton is on video in his State of the Union in 95, way to the right of that piece of legislation. And then you have all the leading conspirators on the other side, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and Dick Durbin, all coming out against chain migration as early as 5 years ago. And so they've totally switched sides. They used to have a kind of an economic backbone, kind of like Bernie. They had a concern about labor workers and the middle class. But now the Democrats have just pivoted way left to this, you know, just this politics of personality and identity politics. You know, it's straight out of the academic, the universities right now. They're just dividing the American people left and right, and it's not working out good for them. And so I think they got plenty of calls from the military constituents in Virginia, and then we had a CHIP bill embedded in there. We all voted yes. They voted no on CHIP. And so I think they heard plenty of feedback coming back and saying, what are you guys doing? And so, and just on the DACA piece itself, just to let people know where the compromise and the bargaining position started, right? When President Trump came down the escalator in the Trump Tower, right? The left said, oh, there's going to be millions and tens of millions deported under President Trump. None of that has happened. They also said he was going to lose and that the stock market was going to tank. The exact opposite has happened. And the compromise went from tens of millions deported to the president agreeing to a DACA deal, right? I mean, so and then the left says you guys won't compromise. So it's pretty staggering. And so we've got a deal for the kids, but the kids, if you allow the DACA piece to go through, that will have a lot of unintended consequences like chain migration and extended families, and that'll lead to millions more. While we're trying to get 20 million American citizens that have left the workforce back in the workforce. And so the left is kind of showing their cards. I think they're being way too biased toward, you know, DAC is okay, but then they're going to Dreamers and up on the count beyond 700,000 into the million category. And then you run into some fundamental economic problems.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit deeper, because you mentioned the difference, and there's a big difference between DACA and Dreamer. A lot of folks in the media and certainly in political office tend to create those as synonyms when they're really not. But by looking at you said the Democratic version was clean DACA. What we're looking at here, as far as I know, that they want to bring forward is the Gang of Six, which includes some Republicans like Lindsey Graham and Jeff Flake and so forth, which would include those who actually signed up for DACA over the past 5 years. That's your 700,000 to 800,000. They also want to include the Dreamers, which is everybody who's eligible but hasn't signed up. So now we're looking over 3 million, according to some folks. And as Tom Cotton pointed out over the weekend, the people who actually committed the crime, the parents, would also get legal status in this. So just how much are conservatives being asked to give away here, or lawmakers of any stripe, with this particular legislation?
Yeah, well, that's right. I think Tom Cotton, I think he got up into the 10 million category. And if you just take the numbers you just said, right, if you just the DACA and the Dreamers, and then you multiply it by three or four for the chain effect, right, where they can invite their entire extended family, not nuclear, right, not mom and dad or kids, but extend every person in your extended family. And the literature out there shows, right, the New York Times has fact-checked this, and they just don't like to stomach the facts. But on average, if you're from, you know, south of the border, you bring in about three or four people. So you multiply, you know, 2 or 3 million. I mean, you multiply the DACA by three or four, and you get 3 or 4 million. If you multiply the Dreamers by three or four, you're upwards of 10 million easily. And yet that the American people are very compassionate, and we want to help the kids and all that kind of thing. But then the key question comes up, and it doesn't matter if you're a church leader or interfaith leader or on the left or whatever, who's going to pay the bill, right? And that's where you get the issue, right? Health care, if you got two kids in public school, that's 26 grand a year. Every person in the country is eligible, if you have certain status, eligible federal benefits of $40,000 a year. That's one of the reasons we have a welfare crisis right now. We've got to get all of our own citizens back in the labor force. And then you see if you have a labor shortage. And then the other key piece is we're trying to move toward a more rational skills and merit-based immigration system, and instead of the familial piece that has got us in this boat in the first place. And that's what people are missing. What caused the immigration crisis we're in? And it's bad Democratic policy in the past. And so if you don't want to have the same error, you can't keep doing the same Democrat policy. You need to put in policy that benefits American workers. And we all love, right, every child from every nation is a child of God. That goes without saying. We want what's best for the rest of the world. And if they would copy our cookbook at the World Bank, right, if they'd ever copy the rule of law and free market philosophy, everybody can be rich. And that's what we want. In fact, stripping out the best and the brightest from the rest of the world, those are the very people you need to be fighting off the despots and the dictators in these corrupt, poorer countries, right, sub-Saharan Africa, et cetera. I worked on that at the World Bank and as an academic for 2 decades. And so it's just not logical and not rational. And we want to put in place, you know, the good lap bill, which is well thought out policy for 2 decades.
And that would greatly curtail chain migration. It would do away with the visa lottery. It would authorize major construction along the southern border and other border security provisions. My last question on immigration before we get to the FISA materials, Congressman, is what you think will actually happen here. We know from the Senate's vote overwhelmingly for the Gang of Eight bill just 5 years ago that the Senate, if it actually has the opportunity to vote on this, is probably going to pass it, which would put a tremendous amount of pressure on the House. Given that scenario, what do you think would happen?
Well, that's right, but it did blow up in the House. I think there was an election that had something to do with it in Virginia, in the 7th District. I've heard rumors. And so something was going on there with the people. And so now the American people have been educated on that. The Senate, of course, probably is a better proxy for the crony politics that people don't like. You get 6 years in. It's huge money, $20 million a race minimum. That's just what they raise, right? That's not from the outside. It might be $100 million in some races. We had a $50 million House race. And so who's paying the bill there, right? And it's not the middle class worker up in Michigan and Pennsylvania and Ohio and those key states that Trump won on exactly this issue. And so, yeah, you're right on the cronies in the Senate that are looking out for big business because they need cheap labor in their districts and they're getting huge checks. They're going to have huge power on them to put together a bad deal, but they're going to have to explain that to the American people. And in the House, we need to start off strong with a Goodlatte bill, and then you can have a debate between the Goodlatte bill and the Senate. And then the president is the ultimate veto threat. So a lot of it is going to depend on where President Trump comes down on this. If he holds to the Goodlatte bill, which he signaled he's in favor of, then there's a better prognosis that you're probably going to get some rational policy. And that's what he ran on, right? I mean, he had 16 very good Republican competitors, and he won on that issue. And then Bernie, all the way through Trump, ran on wages being flat for the past 30 years for the middle class. And so Bernie was successful until the Democrats, you know, rigged the system against him. And then President Trump ended up winning on the middle class issue. So I'd rather throw my weight behind the middle class American voter and worker and see where that leads me, because it's the right thing to do.
Quickly, a couple of questions on the FISA memo. It was approved for all members of the House to see by the House Intelligence Committee along a party line vote. The Democratic leader on his side, the minority side, Adam Schiff, says the public really shouldn't see this because they don't understand what's going on because they haven't seen the supporting materials. You have said that the public should see it. I believe dozens of other House Republicans have said the same. I know you can't talk about it unless it is made public, but in general terms, what troubles you about it and how important is it for the public to see it?
Well, just prior to that issue, I mean, prior to that document, coming out at all. You just had tremendous, and just like I was just talking about, I mean, what was the Bernie all the way through Trump election about? It was about the swamp. Elites are running the place, and the results are disastrous. You got $20 trillion in debt, $100 trillion in unfunded liabilities in Medicare, and an economy that was growing at 1%. The military is not being treated like it should. The K-12 kids aren't up on being pro-business when they graduate from high school. I mean, what could go wrong, right? So the elites have been running that ship, and the ship is off course. And now you have, you know, Schiff and other Democrats saying the American people shouldn't see the information because, you know, what do you think? We live in a democracy? And so that my response is we're a democratic republic. The people are our boss. We're not the boss of the people. And so maybe he got his eighth grade civics upside down, but I still believe in the good old school stuff where the people are my boss and I'm going to let them see the information, let them make up their mind, and then I'm going to represent them. That's my job.
One of the things that some folks who believe that there is a lot to this drip, drip, drip from the FBI and some of the things that have been coming out and some of the revelations in general terms that we've seen from this memo, the language that's been used to say that this is alarming, staggering, people are going to jail, leads some people to wonder whether things have been overpromised here. I noticed you haven't done that. You just believe it ought to be made public. But how concerned are you that some of the language being used is going to make this seem less of a big deal than it is because of how much it's been hyped, for lack of a better word?
Oh, I'm not too worried. I mean, it's all very serious business. I mean, it's just the elites. There's kind of two standards of justice, and you can just back it up to the Hillary thing, right? I mean, when you got the Hillary Foundation with a couple $1 billion and then servers being wiped out and lost emails and bleach bit if you're a presidential candidate and no legal consequences at all, and then after the fact, the Clinton Foundation withers on the vine, it goes to zero, right? So, I mean, if it's good charity doing great deeds, well, the billionaires should be lining up at the door still, and they're not. And so, I mean, it just common sense dictates there's something just very, very wrong at the highest levels in our Justice Department. And so the American people know that, right? And it's across the board. It's not like there's just one party. Both parties need to clean house, and they need to show the American people that they have clean house. And so I'm not too worried about the overhype on this. You cannot overhype any corruption at all in the highest levels of government.
Last question, and it comes right back to the very first thing you said, Congressman. For too long on too many of these key issues, the public has not been part of the mix in the debate. How does that change?
Well, it's very hard because the fundamental problems we had that I just rattled off, right, the $20 trillion debt, the $100 trillion unfunded liabilities, we've been living on a sugar high, right? The Fed has had $4 trillion in high-powered money, giving us a sugar high. We're running trillion-dollar deficits every year, giving you an artificial sugar high. And the doctor just came in the room and said, hey, American people, you're going to have to eat some spinach. And that's the solution, I'm afraid to say, right? But we all know if you want our kids to have the same life we've had, the adults in the room are going to have to eat some spinach and order a healthy diet for the American people so we can have a rational system going forward for our kids. Everybody knows it. And so then the question for the Democrats is, if we talk about that $100 trillion in Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security and all those programs and interest on the debt, are they going to run nasty ads and blow you up? Or are they going to say, hey, no, they're right. We need to have a national conversation on this to solve some of this. And so we'll see. The Democrats had their tax bill, raised taxes $10 trillion, raised spending $11 trillion, and has more debt and deficit than the Republicans when we cut taxes. So you didn't hear that from the mainstream media, but it's a progressive caucus that got 107 votes. And then the mainstream media comes on and says, well, we're very concerned about deficits now, only when it has to do with the Republicans doing a tax cut. And I'll just end on the good news. The good news there is just overwhelming. So that's the when you got a million people saying they're getting $1,000 bonus. And when you got capital coming back from the rest of the world and China having to respond in policy to keep firms in China due to our tax cut, and the average family getting $1,000 back if you're a single mom and $2,000 back for a family of four with two kids, they can't beat that. And so they have to revert to identity politics. So I think we're on good ground there. Everybody's feeling the good news. The surge is coming. And so I'll just end on that little bit of good news.
Congressman, as always, you're very generous with your time. Thank you, sir, very much.
Hey, thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Virginia Republican Congressman Dave Bratt represents his state's 7th Congressional District. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.